Lawrence would rather have liked to knock Rankin into the quicksand.
"Mr. Horthing," he said tightly, "let us begin digging. I doubt the beasts will make any direct attempt while we have Caesar here, nor come near enough for Temeraire to reach them with his jaws."
The row of spectators was nevertheless unpleasant to endure. Those gleaming, pupil-less eyes, malevolent even in their immobility, while they worked and dug heaps of wet sand out from around Temeraire's body to pile up dark and wet into piles like the misshapen sandcastles of small children, towers crumbling as they dried in the rising sun.
"Lawrence,"
Temeraire said as the sun grew higher, "I would not mind a drink of water, if it were at all convenient." Which it could not be, given his size, but Forthing sent men down to fetch back all the largest jugs of water under a pistol-wielding guard. They returned empty-handed.
"There isn't any," O'Day said. "Any water? That has all run away in the night?"
"We drank it nearly dry last night, but it ought to have refilled by now, surely," Forthing said.
Thalke had slipped silently away at their announcement, drawing his own pistol. He returned shortly and said,
"The spring is no longer flowing to the waterhole. It has been diverted. Underground, so far as I can tell."
Lawrence paused, looking up at the row of sentinel bunyips, and said,
"Tenzing, do you mean they have done it? Deliberately?"
"Certainly they have done it deliberately," Temeraire injected. "You cannot imagine they have done it to be friendly. Oh, how I should serve them out if they were not such cowards and hiding all the way over there where I cannot get at them, thanks to all this sand."
Tharkay said, "I see no reason to doubt it. They would find it still more convenient to their hunting to make the waterholes rather than merely take advantage of whatever natural ones the countryside should offer. If they can divert a natural spring to suit one purpose, why not this one?"
"Why did they not make the pit deeper, then, and sink him entire?" Lawrence said.
Tharkay shrugged.
"It is no great difficulty to avoid drowning in quicksand," he said. "He is too buoyant to sink so far. The difficulty is in getting out."
And whatever difficulties should entail on extracting one man trapped in such a quagmire were as nothing to the problem of extracting Temeraire, Lawrence, dismayed, realized, and Temeraire was already thirsty.
"This excavation is nonsense," Rankin said. "We cannot hope to get him out without Granby returns, and that is scarcely likely."
"If you have any better solution to propose, Captain Rankin, we may hear it at any occasion," Lawrence snapped.
He had been looking to the east, vain and unlikely, though the hope was, of course, when they had been blown so far off their course and their line of cairns broken by the storm.
"We might rig some ropes as well," Forthing said, "and do what we can to pull him—"
Rankin snorted. And there was indeed very little to be hoped for from such an effort. 30 men to drag him out when Temeraire himself could not even presently free one limb.
"If you will try and drag him nearer one edge," Lawrence said grimly, "perhaps, Temeraire, you may then draw yourself out."
The ropes were hurled over, and Lawrence secured them about the base of Temeraire's neck and through the rings of the harness, which he was devoutly glad they had not removed the previous night. But there was not very much purchase still for such an operation. With only a handful of passengers and no expectation of combat, Temeraire had barely been rigged out with what harness was necessary to support his belly rigging. 30 men hauling, the rope resting upon their shoulders, their hands wrapped around the length. Temeraire did move, a little, trying to help as best he might, with a sort of paddling, but they gained a few inches with the best they could do and needed perhaps 50 feet.
"Sir," Forthing said to Captain Rankin, "I believe we must rig Caesar up,"
politely but firmly. Rankin hesitated, but could scarcely refuse under the circumstances.
"I will help also,"
Kulingile piped up, watching, and seized onto the rope near the edge with his jaws to pull. Domain said,
"Wait," and to Mr. Fellows said, "Can you put him into harness?"
"Precious good that will do,"
Caesar said, ungraciously submitting to having the ropes secured to his own harness, as Kulingile was hooked into a makeshift affair of a few straps and buckles. He had grown at least to the size of a respectable cart horse, and while he might not be anything to Temeraire or to Caesar, he was not wholly inconsequential. Mr. Fellows said,
"We might send the ropes around a tree or some of these rocks to make a bit of a pulley, sir."
They took up the oilcloths and folded them together to make a pad about an outcropping of rocks, and stretched their two hawsers around it. Caesar and Kulingile were put at the end, and the men hauled on wheresoever they might. The bunyips made an excellent overseer, their small eyes gleaming. If Temeraire were taken so, Caesar could not carry all the men out of the desert, and if any were left behind, there was hardly any doubt of the death sentence to be read in those eyes. Muscles strained and groaning, they all pulled together, Temeraire bracing back his neck so the pulling would act upon his body instead. The quicksand glubbed around his breastbone and eddied away, curling in upon itself in thick, slow-moving rolls like pudding batter being stirred. And he moved. A little. Only a little, but he moved.
"Heave there!" Forthing shouted, and "Heave!"
one enormous effort after another, each one winning a little more space. Temeraire tried to paddle a bit, to move himself along. Another united heave, and he slid a few more inches through the muck. A few men fell to their knees, panting, all but hanging from the rope. Caesar snapped,
"There's enough of that. We're all pulling, aren't we? Get up, then."
They crawled back up. Forthing sent Sifo down the line with a swallow of rum for each man, the last dribbled end of their supply, with nowhere to look for more. But he did not mix it with water, and the taste of the hard liquor heartened them, more a memory of satisfaction than a reality with the sun still beating upon them. But with a great straining effort they drew again upon the ropes, and Caesar, for all his complaining, threw his powerful shoulders fully into the effort. Kulingile, too, strained. He drew great heaving breaths, and his long claws scrabbled into the earth as he leaned into the harness, and then abruptly his slack and crumpled sides belled out, very like sails catching the wind, into smooth roundness. He gasped in his thin, fragile voice, and clawed furiously at the ground again. Domain was by his head, encouraging and pulling also.
"What is the matter?"
he said, then catching sight of the swelled-out sides, said,
"Dorset, Dorset, what is wrong with him?"
"Not now!" Forthing snapped.
"All together, heave!"
The ropes slid upon the oilcloth, and putting their heads down, they one and all pulled. Feet dug into the sand, driving up dark red hillocks of the damp sand below. One man started to sing. "There were two lofty worms for old England came," and one after another took it up. Awkward voices, dry and cracked with the heat and lack of water, and tuneless. But their feet crept on. Little by little the ropes crept after them, and Temeraire was moving. Then abruptly someone yelled,
"Christ, the buggers are coming at us!"
And the ropes were falling. Caesar turned in the yoke and was instantly in a tangle as men dropped all the slack of the ropes and began to run. As a couple of the bunyips made a sudden darting quick lunge down the slope, lean and serpentine, broad splayed feet webbed a little between narrow clawed fingers to give them purchase on the sand. Roland was too short to get more than her fingertips on the rope. She had her pistol out already, and her first shot caught the advancing bunyip in the thigh. It flinched back, its mouth opening on a peculiar and incongruous sound, a low, throaty howl, more like the coughing of a hyena than the hiss of a reptile. And then it came swarming on again.
"Roland!"
Temeraire called, very anxiously, and Lawrence found his hand uselessly clenching upon his sword-hilt.
"If I should roar!"
Temeraire began, but he could not. The divine wind would as surely have killed Roland herself, or more likely brought the whole slope down upon them, and buried them, bunyips, men, and dragons, all together into a single common grave. Temeraire strained his neck, but he was too far to reach. She held her position coolly. She was already reloading, the cartridge tearing in her teeth, black powder into the barrel, and then the wadding and the bullet rammed down hard, powder in the pan, and she took aim and fired again as it drew nearer. The second shot took it in the throat, and the howl was choked. Blood ran deep, near black, from the wound, very like dragon blood, dripping upon the sand and making small wet pockets in the red earth. The bunyip curled over itself, coughing. Young Ensign Widener had his small single pistol drawn now. He fired also, though the recoil nearly staggered him, and the second bunyip flinched from the noise. Then instead of continuing after the fleeing men, it darted for the ropes themselves. It moved a little awkwardly, perhaps, over the sand, a quick but skittering motion, the hind legs small and the forelegs enormous and disproportionate, and two strange half-circle stubs rising between the shoulders, small webbed ridges. Seen in profile, it had an enormous lantern-jawed head, built to crush and grip, and the talons of the forelegs were short but hard, gleaming black horn. It seized upon the rope and took a length between its jaws and began to pull.
"Damn you all for cowards!" Roland yelled over her shoulder as she reloaded. "Come back here and stop them, or they'll pick us all off!"
And she fired again. Forthing had dragged himself free of the ropes, and Domain, who had been at the end. He dived for Lawrence's pistols in amongst his things and fired again at the bunyip. The shots took chips off the rock, and one struck home. The second bunyip howled and let go the rope, retreating. It stopped only to nose the first, still bleeding, and they together skittered, limping back up the slope to rejoin the rest of the watchful band, the others more patient, more prepared to wait. Their effort had not been in vain, if it had cost them. The ropes hung slack and all ahoo, Caesar only making matters worse with his efforts to work loose, and the chewing had worn through a couple of strands of the cable. Forthing inspected the damage grimly, and then he said, "Back to work, gentlemen," and detailed off Roland and Domain with pistols to stand guard. The men straggled back from their panicked flight, but not all of them. Two did not return, and Lawrence, looking up at the ridge, noted that there were fewer bunyips watching than before. They had not failed to take advantage then of the confusion which they had created.
"It is not at all fair," Temeraire said stormily, "that they will do such things where I cannot even try to fight back. Low and sneaking, and they ought to be ashamed. I am glad that we have drunk their water and wrecked their territory. I will do it again, whenever I am loose."
They resumed their effort. Caesar was untangled, the damaged rope was mended, a little, as best it could be, and Fellows wrapped some oilcloth about the gnawed section and sewed it down with waxed thread. The men spat upon their hands and rubbed them with dirt and took hold. No one sang. Inch by inch, Temeraire shifted.
"If you should exhale just as they heave," Lawrence said, "you might make a little more slack in the sand."
And the trick helped, a little. Altogether, breathed in and took hold, and exhaling, pulled. Temeraire, breathing out, opened a small gap of softness in the quicksand, into which they might drag him a little further.
"Oh," he said abruptly, "pull, pull harder. I think I can feel a little rock."
And with this encouragement they all threw their backs into another throw. And then all were stumbling onto their knees with the ropes gone suddenly slack, as Temeraire gave a low, struggling hiss and managed to pull himself nearly a foot further along. He was obliged to stop, panting, but he did not sink back. They drew the ropes slack again, and with another heave, now all their efforts united, his breastbone rose several more inches from the clinging murk. Lawrence swung down onto Temeraire's shoulder and said,
"Mr. Forthing, if you will fetch me a shovel, I think we may begin to do some good clearing some of this away."
And they detailed away some five of the men to the work, shoveling away the quicksand from before Temeraire's body to the sides, while the hauling teams yet strained to assist him in the effort of climbing free. The evening was coming on a little. The watching bunyips, one after another, began to disappear as Temeraire made his slow and creeping escape. When at last they freed his first foreleg, coming loose with a gargled, sucking noise like a choked drain running clear, the last of them were gone. And when Roland and Domain warily went to look over the edge of the slope, they returned to report no sign of the bunyips anywhere upon the flat plain of the desert. Likely they had gone somewhere beneath the earth, to brood upon the failure of their attempt, and perhaps to envision another. With his forelegs free, Temeraire might more easily exert force, and they restrung the ropes around his midsection, behind the foreleg joints, to better pull. He began to drag himself onward, little by little, and they dug around the ends of his wings to free them. Then around the hindquarters, as little by little he crawled the rest of the way out, and crumpled exhausted upon the solid ledge of rock, free at last, and caked thickly with red sand dried onto him by the sun.
"Oh, how tired I am," he said, and closed his eyes.
They were united in thirst and hunger, but exhaustion commanded still more of their spirit, and the men were dropping where they stood. Lawrence sat down and leaned against Temeraire's side, heedless of the red sand crumbling over his coat, and closed his eyes. Then he opened them again and looked up, as Iskierka came spiralling down from the clouds, and demanded,
"Whatever have you been doing? You're all over sand, and where is the egg? You might have found it again by now."